This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
The world has known about the Dead Sea Scrolls for almost 80 years now. Scholarly research on the scrolls continues, with new discoveries about the scrolls still being announced. As we were talking with Bobby Duke of the Museum of the Bible about the current Dead Sea Scrolls exhibition at the museum in Washington, D.C., one of the topics that came up was the use of artificial intelligence to date the scrolls. Last year, it was announced a team from Groningen University in the Netherlands had used AI on a batch of scrolls. Project Enoch, as it was called, had discovered that scroll fragments related to the Book of Daniel seemed to indicate that they were quite a bit older than originally dated by paleographers. I asked Bobby Duke about that.
So when it comes to scribal hand, we know that there were dozens, if not scores, of scribes that can be identified by the different ways they wrote letters. Yes, they would be taught to write letters a certain way, but we all have our own unique thumbprint, so to speak, on how we write things. And AI can be a wonderful tool. And I think it's one where anytime you have these new technologies, the early scroll scholars, as you mentioned, paleography. I mean, it was the way that scrolls were dated, that how a letter or a group of letters were written could show, was it 2nd century BC, 1st century BC, was it 1st century AD? And in general, I would say that there was a lot of confidence in that. And I will say, I think ultimately AI and DNA, carbon-14 will show that there is a lot of similarities to what was suggested by paleography and this. But there have been ones that have pushed the date back a little farther. So farther in the 2nd, maybe even 3rd century BC, which is exciting. But I would not right now bet everything on AI. But I would say it's another tool to use in the toolbox when you have carbon dating, paleography analysis, and now AI. With AI being the one that can process a ton of data to say, could these two texts have been written by the same scribe? Could this text that we know was carbon dated have very similar handwriting to this one? And it can just crunch data very, very quickly.
Well, the intriguing thing about this AI analysis is the scrolls that apparently should have been dated earlier were connected to the Book of Daniel, which has very controversial dating.
You have some of those Persian era biblical books when it comes to when they are dated and when they fall. But I would say, again, we're still early in the days of AI technology and its integration across the sciences, not just in biblical studies or others. So it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, one of the things we have to talk about when it comes to the Museum of the Bible and the Dead Sea Scrolls is the stories from, I guess it was about 6 years ago that I was reporting on. The museum found itself in the embarrassing position of having purchased fake Dead Sea Scrolls, but also was praised for its transparency about the whole situation. Yeah. And how he dealt with it. What was learned from that situation?
Yeah. Well, what's so unique about Dead Sea Scrolls research in general is the concern is when you have non-provenanced documents, so ones that are not dug up right from the ground. So the Dead Sea Scrolls from their initial discovery of Cave 1 by the Bedouin has almost been a non-provenanced research industry. So you would have the Bedouin discover a cave, and then the scholars might come back and find more, and then those were concretely found in the ground. So when it comes to non-provenance and the fact that the Bedouin found most of the caves first, there's always this possibility that there are even still more texts out there that have been in private hands since the 1950s. And that was just part of this wider story of non-provenance Dead Sea Scroll fragments that were in private hands. It was one that the goal is to, again, as you said, have transparency. So the research was done, various different high-intensity microscopes that could look very closely at the text. So you can, anyone wants, can go on our website and read the whole report for when we did that and get to see how science does what science does. As new questions come up, you would look at it again, and then you just follow the data as it leads. I would say there are still scholars out there that debate, are there forgeries or not? How do you know? How do you understand that? So it's one where it'll be kind of exciting to see even things with AI. How does that continue to push this forward to give more precision to some of these non-provenance texts that are out there? And even in the Israel Antiquities story, some of those were found by the Bedouin initially. One of the moments that would have been wonderful to have is if you had photography from that cave one on, and every discovery was photographed and looked at. But I mean, Dead Sea Scrolls has been a very intriguing process from day one, as it was a race between the Bedouin and the archaeologists of who's going to find the next cave.
So the Museum of the Bible does not currently own any Dead Sea Scrolls.
No, the Museum of the Bible, we do not display any of those that are of concern. And one of our desires with our partnership with the Israel Antiquities Authority was to display fragments and this wider story that are ones that are completely kind of approved, so to speak, by all scholars out there, that these are ones that have been part of the holdings when they were at the Palestine Archaeological Museum, later named the Rockefeller, and been part of the IAA holdings since the early days in the 1950s.
So you mentioned that people can go to the Museum of the Bible website and read this whole story. Is there any part of that story that's part of the current display of the Dead Sea Scrolls?
No, so we don't have anything in the exhibit because the exhibit comes to us by another production company. So we partner with a group called Running Subway, and Running Subway works with the Israel Antiquities Authority, not just for the exhibit at the museum, but it is a traveling exhibit. So it started at the Ronald Reagan Museum in Southern California. It came to us, and now I've been told that there are two other venues to which this exhibit's going to go when it leaves us. So the exhibit itself is kind of generic that fits all of those locations. And I will say that it is fun to be part of this train as it keeps moving to see how different people around the country react and how this is one that, whether it's in Southern California, Washington, D.C., or wherever it goes from here, will be something that will inspire tens and tens of thousands of guests to come see.
So you don't know, or you can't say where it goes from here?
I have heard rumors, but because I don't know if they are contracted yet, but stay tuned. Probably within the next 3 to 6 months, it will be announced of where it's going from there. And your program can have the first crack at interviewing those local scholars there.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Dr. Bobby Duke, the Chief Curatorial Officer of the Museum of the Bible, about the Dead Sea Scrolls display that's now at the Museum of the Bible. Going back to the fake Dead Sea Scrolls, do you think that's an area that needs more attention, finding out which ones are fake and which are real?
I would say I think there will definitely be continued scholarly discussion over the coming years, if not decades, as it being part of the story of the scrolls. I recently was working with the publisher when it comes to even Westenfield's second volume of the history of the Dead Sea Scrolls. His first volume came out fantastic, but it only got up to the early 50s. This next volume gets up to like 67. So there'll come a time when even the whole history of the Dead Sea Scrolls continues on, and we'll have to get to the modern period. And there'll be whole chapters on what we have learned during this process. I think the biggest thing you're going to see is that any Dead Sea Scroll fragments that are possibly still in private hands that might show up as children and grandchildren are selling off things from their parents or grandparents, they will receive an amazing amount of scrutiny. And it will be interesting, even with AI technology, will any of these fragments have handwriting that AI can tell us is similar to ones that are in the known collection in the IAA or in Jordan? Because there are some Dead Sea Scrolls over in Jordan still today.
That includes the Copper Scroll, which is kind of a list of treasures that were hidden away. Have you, as a part of your Dead Sea Scrolls research, done much looking into the Copper Scroll?
So I was in Amman just a little over a month ago, and I got to go to the Jordan Museum, which is fantastic. I would encourage anyone who can, when they're in Amman, to go see it. It tells a wonderful story of all the antiquities in Jordan, but they have a special gallery of the Dead Sea Scrolls that they have in Jordan, which is about 4 or 5 small fragments. And then they have the Copper Scroll. And it just so happened that those items were on display in Jordan when the 1967 war concluded, at which point Israel had control of all the scrolls that were in East Jerusalem, and Jordan still had these items that were in Amman. But the Copper Scroll is still one of the biggest mysteries of the Dead Sea. Scholars today still don't know, was it fictional? Was it actually a treasure map? Why would they have taken the time to inscribe this text on copper? Was it part of the temple treasures? Was it not? It was found in Cave 3. Cave 3 is the farthest cave north from the settlement. So was the cave actually connected to the group of Qumran or not. Certain of the caves, 4, 5, 6, up through 10, you can only get to by going through the settlement. So they are definitely connected. Well, what about this one that's a mile up the valley? Is that connected or not? There have definitely been treasure seekers. People have read that text and tried to go out and discover these talents and talents of gold and silver and you name it.
Some scholars say if it really was a treasure map, the Romans would have been able to find all of those treasures with torture or whatever else devices they would have used. So the treasure wouldn't be there. Well, another one of the mysteries of the Dead Sea Scrolls is why is the Book of Esther the only biblical book that's not in the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Yeah, I would say two things. I think the first is the fact that some of the later biblical books that we know date-wise, like Chronicles and others, only show up in very tiny fragments. So there is a chance that it was in the caves, and just because of the ravages of time and critters eating up things in the caves, that it just disappeared. But we do know that the Qumran calendar, they have some of their, what we call sectarian literature, the literature that is connected to that group that was at Qumran. And we know that the Festival of Purim was not on their calendar of festivals or holidays they celebrated. So was that one where does that show that this group at Qumran was a kind of non-traditional Jewish group at the time that had a, in some ways, a different list of books that they read at, on the canonical level? I mean, we do know they pulled away from what we would call normative Judaism. They seem to have huge struggles with the priestly establishment in Jerusalem by the fact that they called their enemy the wicked priest. So it could be one where it either was just destroyed or was just not part of this group's kind of reading right there as they pulled away from normative Judaism.
Well, final question relates back to my visit to the Museum of the Bible a year or so ago. I was treated very well. Thank you again for the wonderful visit that I had. I was there to see the Megiddo Mosaic, and I understand you still have the Megiddo Mosaic.
Yeah, we do. So we were able to extend the contract we have with the Israel Antiquities Authority. We will have it on display through the end of December. And it truly is amazing that the only place in the world right now where you can see the oldest church ever discovered and some of the oldest biblical texts ever discovered are at Museum of the Bible. I don't know if that will ever happen again, because the Megiddo Mosaic will eventually find its home back in Israel. They're conceptualizing a museum somewhere near where it was discovered at the Megiddo prison. And I don't know if that will ever be partnered with actually bringing Dead Sea Scrolls. So this may be the only time that you will have the oldest church and the oldest biblical text in the same building.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, thank you for filling us in on what's going on at the Museum of the Bible right now. Our guest has been Dr. Bobby Duke, the Chief Curatorial Officer of the Museum of the Bible. We have links to information on the museum and the Dead Sea Scrolls on our website at radioscribe.com. We also have information on our Biblical Archaeology News magazine, Artifacts, as well as breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority. You can find them all at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.